Welcome to the El Arpa podcast, the home for cultural chit-chat in and outside Madrid. People will talk. Welcome to the latest episode of the El Arpa podcast. Joining me in studio is the indomitable Mary. How are you doing this fine evening?
I'm pretty well, thank you. You?
I'm giggly by the sounds of it, but yeah, I'm good too. So first of all, right out the gate, we have to say we went to a pop-up Guelga event at the weekend, Saturday night, hosted by the wonderful Dunica, iberokelt17 on Twitter. We'll link the blog article we wrote off the back of that in the description of the podcast, but we had no idea what was in store for us. We were desperately,
as usual,
of course, throwing ourselves into the deep end. But we were just clutching onto the vague fact that we were just there to observe, like UN peacekeepers, not to actively engage. But we got pulled in straight
what
away.
What happened with that? Because we weren't observing, we weren't interviewing.
We were peace enforcers, not peacekeepers.
Exactly.
Well, in terms of actually being involved, we weren't settling disputes or anything because the people, they were very, very nice and it was a really good event. But it was weird to be speaking this new language. You kept thinking of Arabic. New language in terms of, like, actively speaking it.
Yes,
but
you say it was weird for you, imagine for me.
Yeah, I mean, they told me that the words would come back to me, and to be fair, they actually did.
Yes, they did. I was thinking, what's going on? You can speak perfectly.
We were talking about a lot of things, holidays, drink driving, and Kerry, I think, or somewhere. I don't know.
So yes.
I only half understood it. Maybe they weren't even talking about that at all. I have no idea.
That's why you said to me anyway.
Yeah, and good range of people from all parts of the islands. I do know a Spanish lad, actually, and a Yank. It would be interesting going as well. So I'll tell them about the experiences. But I think the waiters were freaking out as well. Well, one waiter kind of bemused, he was happy. He's like, this is weird, I don't know what this is, but I like it. It's kind of like corner of the bar that's speaking this impenetrable language. Another waiter was just like, I don't know what this is and I don't like it.
Well, they had a sign up in the corner.
I really
liked
that.
Which was quite cool.
Yeah, it was very nice.
And I suppose they're used to the fact that they go there once a month, but maybe some waiters haven't come across them.
Once, kind of 4 to 6 weeks as well. Right. But it was exciting because we did the online course, as we said before. And as I said to you on the night and in the blog article, that it is a strange situation to find yourself in where you're struggling for the word and you're nervous and everybody's looking at you. You can't really articulate what you want to say.
We've all been through that.
We all have all been through that. And but like then you can see it on the faces of the other people there as well. And it's just a feeling I didn't really remember until that moment, because when I first started speaking Spanish, it's exactly like that.
It's been that long ago.
Has been quite a long time, yeah. Since 7 years.
Yeah.
By the way, you got your hair cut, which was a similar length to 7 years ago. That's the memories are flooding back. It's a throwback Tuesday, Thursday.
Yeah.
Which means we have to publish this on a Thursday for that to make sense. But you, I mean, you as a Spanish person, the outsider, That sounds wrong, outsider. You know what I mean.
The outsider in my own country, some people would say. I was an outsider to a point because everybody spoke Irish to a certain degree. And obviously I have 3 sentences or something in me.
Cut asked it?
No, I don't know. España.
Es as leandom.
No. Bueno, close enough.
Bueno, well.
Okay.
That's another thing as well, actually, when people were struggling for words, they spoke Spanish.
Yes, of course. I mean, that's what happens.
Yeah. Well, I don't know why we didn't default to English. But then, like, if there are periods where we spoke English. I think towards the night before we left, we kind of spoke English as well. Because I think we'd exhausted the Irish that we knew. But for a period, it's just like, okay, you can't speak Irish, speak Spanish. At least it's not English. It's just like another language. So you still kind of like practicing a language, but you know, so it's kind of like all these kind of different influences and cultures going on as well. No?
I think so, yes, no.
So yeah, all in all, a good experience, no, for you? Yeah?
Yes, no, it was really interesting.
Well, we'll leave it there about the Irish pop-up Gwil Talk. It was a great night. And Dunica was a great host as well, and all the other lads there were sound out. One thing I do say in the blog as well, which I think is really cool, is that, like, you know, you're there because you want to learn. In other language exchanges, you are sometimes compelled to go or obliged to go because of work, and sometimes you can be very bitter about that, or I've experienced people who are not very happy about having to speak English. But also as well because you can't really speak very well in Irish. Like, you know, you don't talk about terrible things, you talk about happy things, because Irish is a happy language anyway, sometimes. And also as well, you're just like, well, what if you're making an effort to communicate, let's just talk about nice things, you know. As I said to you on a night, Ireland, the Irish language has the past tense, a conditional tense, present tense, but no future tense, because we're so unremittingly bleak and hopeless.
You've just said you're happy.
That's the contradiction of the Irish soul, so there. Easily explained away.
Okay.
So that was our Gaeltacht weekends. It'll be more all Ireland stuff in part two, with a toque of Morocco. And we'll be talking to you very soon after the musical interlude. Welcome to part two of the show. We hope you enjoyed that little bit of music. And we are taking requests. Just text in 115 at ARPA for the latest hit you want to hear. But in the meantime, let's talk about two exhibitions we've been to. So this is kind of mostly Irish show. We will talk about India in the last part, and we spoke about Ireland in the first part. In the second part, we speak about Ireland a little bit more, and as we said, a little touch of Morocco as well. But we went to an exhibition based on a photographer from Dublin called Eamon Doyle in Fundación Mapfre. You were the first person to come across this. You were very excited. An Irish photographer in Madrid. We go to lots of exhibitions. It's not very often that we get to see a boy from the old country, from the old sod, coming over. So apart from him being Irish, did you see any examples of his photographs on Twitter before contacting me about your find?
Well, I saw the picture that is on the front of the leaflet for the exhibition.
Yeah.
That is basically the back of a man with a hat standing in the corner of a road.
Yeah. That's essentially it. And basically, they're very close-up shots, photographs of people. It's divided into three sections, more or less, or maybe four, depending how you view it. But he's done three kind of shows, and they're put together here in Fundación Mapfre. The one picture you're referring to refers to his very first series, where he takes pictures of people around Dublin. And like as you said, they seem to be popping out of the scene, you know. Apparently he's very influenced by Samuel Beckett, a lot of Irish literature as well, a little bit of philosophy. I don't know if this is Beckettian or Beckett, I don't know, from Beckett. People that's kind of like half part of the landscape, half coming out of it. But whatever the influence is, this is definitely some of the strongest work in the collection, because it is very eye-grabbing. It's just everyday scenes done really, really well, no?
Well, there's a key thing, I think, which is the fabric, the detail of the fabric, that even before you read about it, you realize that, I don't know, this is so much detail in what people are wearing, like the wool of the garments. And one of the things that struck me the most was the dust. There were a couple of...
the homeless guy, yeah.
Yes, there were a couple of like pictures of homeless people, and you could really see, I mean, it stood out, the dust that they had on their jackets, which is quite unusual to see.
Yeah. Well, just to mention, we mentioned that the four exhibitions, actually, I, On, End, and then K, which is split between Ireland and Spain. But he was a photographer, he's a photographer. He was heavily involved with the music industry. And these photographs are meant to symbolize the music of the city, which sounds quite corny, but if you as a thesis or a concept, if it's applied properly, can be very interesting. I think the dust is probably the quality of the technical aspects of the camera. You can really see the details of the people, their clothes, and then whatever might be on those clothes, you know. And as a dust, as you mentioned, and that probably is the music of the city for him. These are the notes that tell this tune of what Dublin is. And it's quite an interesting concept, because we do think of Dublin, Ireland in particular, but Dublin, I guess, mostly in the Irish context of music, and you associate that with the Dubliners, of course, a lot of like traditional music or kind of like drinking songs, and U2 from Dublin as well. But this is like music in a different way. And later on, even we'll talk about that in more detail, that the video segment has some kind of music as well, which is discordance, dissonance, and very alien to like what you would imagine when you hear the words Ireland and music. So that's quite interesting as well. So there's another part as well, which follows on from that. It's a black and white series of Dublin as well. It's very different. Shows like the first series shows like old people primarily and a homeless guy. The second series shows a variety of people around Dublin, immigrants included. So it's a wider net cast over the city. There's some really good photographs. It's one of these three guys who don't know each other, but they're walking in a central part of Dublin, because you can see the Gate Theatre behind them, and one guy just looks like he will deck you.
I was gonna say
that. He just looks angry. He's wearing his tight t-shirt and he just looks angry. So there's a Chinese guy behind him, and then an Irish guy wearing a Liverpool top, and just, you know, it's a shot from a low angle as well. You can see the smoke in the sky that's dominating the space as well, and it just seems like it's some kind of modern Western. He's like Clint Eastwood. But, you know, it's very strange. Also, of course, at this point of the exhibition, I was swearing more because I was surrounded by Dublin pictures, no? So I apologize for offending your ears at this part of the tour. Not tour, exhibition. But so this second series, I think you liked as well. Do you want to say anything about that?
No, I thought it was nice because there were some portraits from like up close, and I think they were like quite beautiful, you know, in the detail, and sort of like as different people coexisting in the city. And
yeah,
I don't know, there was also like the way of taking the pictures made them look very big, so
yeah,
it said in the text kind of like giants,
yeah, well,
dominating the city.
That's exactly it. And of course the most famous giant in Irish literature comes from Jonathan Swift, when the giant goes to the land of Lilliput, which, I mean, could be an influence as well, because there is Kevin Barry, the Irish writer, is involved in the video section because he's written the stories that accompany the images. But yeah, going back even just to the first series, there's a great picture as well of a guy. For some reason, you think it's a surfboard.
I think it was just like a small ironing board, but yeah, well, but you cannot see that well, and actually it fits in a bag, so, you know, there's doubts about it.
Very loose doubts. But it's a Michael Guiney's bag, which, by the way, I don't think Guiney sells surfboards, but it's a shop, if you're Irish, knows, if you're Irish, you know this shop is like, it's like Primark, but even cheaper. So just like that story kind of grabbed me a little bit more, because like I know the context of, I mean, you can imagine, obviously it's always imagination, I don't know who this guy is, but because of that little detail, you can imagine, you know, the scene before you went there, in the shop itself as well, what it looks like, because I'm familiar with it, and then coming back, you can kind of imagine the rhythm of his particular life as well. There's also like another series, there's like a set of photographs where he kind of mixes the people with the landscape in a different way. The debris of fast food restaurants and things littered around, and he says that he doesn't know when people ends and where the rubbish kind of begins. This is just, I mean, photographs of fast food restaurants. It's nothing really particularly special, I think, you know? It's kind of a hit and a miss with that one.
I liked was the section just before that, the section in between those ones and the black and white ones.
Yeah, well, that's what I wanted to talk about as well, because that, of course, well, since you brought it up, you have the honor of explaining it.
No, it was a series on, like, manholes, basically. and it just they had different marks on them. So before you read it, all you saw was like basically the lids and just different marks around.
Continue.
And then on the text, it explained that it was the marks, the yellow marks with like yellow paint, fluorescent paint, or whatever.
Yeah, but that, I mean, yeah, you want to say it, though, no? The Queen Elizabeth visit.
Yes, I was gonna say it.
And the police were checking the manhole covers for bombs or anything like that. Yeah. So why did you like it so much?
I just found it interesting.
Okay. Well, they said in the exhibition that it was like cave paintings from olden times, from caveman times. What do you think about that?
Well, no, I mean, I don't know. I think that's probably irrelevant. It's like, it's important, you know, like it's a symbol enough by itself. There's no need to compare it to anything else. But
yeah,
if it wasn't because of that, it would have probably gone unnoticed. But it's also like the symbolism of, you know, what's behind that, and obviously the whole politics and the whole aspect of the visit of the Queen and all that, and what it all entails.
Well, it's kind of nice as well, because obviously when you have these big events, you have the merchandise and the t-shirts and the hats and all that kind of stuff. And this is another visual reminder of what's happening in a big way. But also, I probably in the mind of the photographer, I mean, if he likes the vibe of the city, it's definitely, I think, an idea of the transitory nature of the city as well. So nothing's really permanent, everything's moving, because all the people in his photographs are moving. And even though we don't see people in these photographs, there's movement as well. People coming, there's big events, they leave back to where they come from. And also these marks, which are very significant in the moment that they've been taken, also disappear as well. So I don't know, maybe it has that kind of element to it as well. There's a photo, the video series as well, where we see six stories told with music and narration, and the stories are written by Kevin Barry. What were your opinions on that?
No, I didn't have much to say about the video anyway. It's just not my cup of tea, really. I mean, the text, I didn't think it was that bad. You thought it was a bit cliche.
Yeah, just like the city is like this place where under the surface, behind a white picket fence idea, there's something lurking. And I just felt that it's kind of not interesting to do it that way, because if you want to talk about a city hiding secrets, I think it's much more interesting to describe the details of that city. I mean, in a kind of more middle of the road, but not in such extremists, because even when James Joyce is writing Dubliners, he tells like a lot of the city through the kind of everyday details. But then again, look, there's different ways to write stories, and this is just one that I've seen many times, and it's not particularly wrong, but I think maybe there needs to be a new way to find a new way to represent what a city looks like in the narrative form, you know? Because like, there's a lot of Irish stories that are, they're good, and like they're written in the vernacular of the place where they're set as well, and sometimes it's just like, I get it, this is really fits the story, other times it feels like it's kind of tagged on to give it, I don't know, like a voice that it maybe doesn't have through the story. But that was just my opinion anyway. So we'll move on to the last part then, which is the series K, which is basically split between Ireland and Spain. So this exhibition, this part of the exhibition is split between the Western Ireland and Western Spain, basically focusing on the immigration between those two countries and the cultural significance of that. Also there's two deeper levels to that. The funeral music, which is typical to Ireland, maybe other kind of places as well, but these kind of melancholic moans, or, you know, this kind of funereal singing, which the BBC did a great podcast on a few years ago, is a kind of background music to this. Also, his brother passed away quite young, and his mother wrote a letter to him every day until she passed away as well. So he superimposes some of those letters on top of each other to create images. But primarily, you have these spectral kind of fabric-covered figures in these empty spaces that perhaps represent the ghosts of the people trapped going there and back and there and back again. Which I said maybe unfairly in the exhibition reminded me of the woman from the E17 video, Stay Another Day. Had that kind of vibe to it. So again, I mean, he's a great photographer. I liked a lot of the stuff he did. I didn't like this either, but before I kind of explain why I didn't, I do know that you did like it. So what did you like about this in particular?
No, I mean, I thought, obviously, you can tell that he studied painting because before photography, because there's kind of like a painting like quality to them. I thought they were nice, and they were quite evocative, but I think it would have been nicer to have a little bit more of like the landscape or the surroundings.
Yeah.
And yeah, I wasn't like crazy about them. I thought like they were nice, but they maybe like failed to convey for me that extra layer of meaning that they were supposed to have related to this grief, you know.
Yeah, well, I think as well it was very hard to connect with it because I am an Irish immigrant, and obviously as an Irish person I'm familiar with what music represents in our culture also, but I felt that, I mean, to go back to the funeral singing that he used, typically that would be done in houses, and even there's a few times going from Galway when the ships were going off to America, you had the American wake when people died in a sense because they wouldn't come back ever again. So even though they went on living, it was in another country, on another continent. It was effectively a death for the family, and people would gather on that hill and see that ship disappear into the distance and sing these type of songs as well. And my thinking is, you know, because I did something on Emmett Till, and obviously, well, he's, for those who don't know, he was a boy killed but in Mississippi for something he didn't really do. It was like a very racist lynching, but his mother put his battered corpse and face on display in an open casket funeral. Some photographers from Jet Magazine published it, published the photographs in their journal magazine, I should say, and it became emblematic of the racial divide in America, influenced a lot of people, Martin Luther King, the civil rights movement in general. Muhammad Ali even has a great story about it as well. But basically, there's been a lot of analysis of like how that photograph influences people, where you saw it, and how that interacts with how that affects how you interact with the photograph. And basically, what I'm trying to say is like that. Not only is it just photographs, but where they're set, where you are looking at them as well. I think there could have been a better relationship established between us looking at the photograph and what was happening in the photograph to give a sense of like when and how these songs were sung and what was happening when people left the countries, for example, to kind of establish a better relationship between geography and the people, and really having just kind of this lone figure in a robe in a barren landscape is kind of empty of things and empty of meaning for me. So I think that's kind of why I didn't really connect to the last part of this exhibition, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. I think, well, I suppose the explanation I could find was that, you know, having heard the story about the grieving mother, and I thought it made me more, I found it more evocative more than of emigration, of the, I don't know, like the feeling of like being lost or like isolated or misunderstood, that sort of thing that would come with like grief or like feeling like out of your body. So it's kind of like you can tell that it's a person, but it's just different shapes and you cannot really tell who it is. So from like an abstract point of view of related more to grief, then I can see,
yeah,
where it is coming from. It doesn't work very well for me, but
yeah. Well, I mean, if it's based on mythology as well, according to mythology, the Spanish gods observed Ireland at the top of a watchtower. So I don't know, maybe a tall, elongated figure represents this kind of connection as well. These countries are visible from a great height. I don't know, I'm reaching here, but it's probably based on things like that. Or maybe not, I don't know. But overall, a really interesting exhibition. So well done, Eamon Doyle, you are a legend. So we'll move on to, we'll talk about Morocco now. And this is another exhibition that you saw, which is in our favourite haunt, Casa Arabe, which is just next to the Retiro and things like that. This woman, Leila Alawi, is that how you pronounce it?
Alawi, yeah.
Alawi. So yeah, so this poor woman was killed on assignment with Amnesty International in a terrorist attack. Quite a young woman and a very talented photographer. And well, she's an exhibition basically photographing people from Morocco. And maybe you can take it from here because you are our local Arabic expert.
No, not really. But yeah, she died 3 years ago. Well, she was working in Burkina Faso with Amnesty International. And I think it's a real shame, but this exhibition is, I think, it bears testimony to the sort of work that she did. And in the exhibition, you can see, well, it's basically portraits of people with a black background, and it sounds like a very old-fashioned thing, but and it actually says that at the beginning that it's an old-fashioned technique, the idea of a portrait, but they're actually very, very expressive. I think there's a vast array of indigenous clothing and different, different things that make you think not only where that person was from in Morocco and the variety, like ethnic variety and cultural like richness that there is there, but also social position, you know, from like from the clothes and even down to like the job and the environment. There's one old man whose eyes are particularly I don't know, they sort of like call you from the picture because they're very watery, and obviously he probably is half blind, and he's holding this this chicken and well, as if it was his most treasure belonging. And it's nice because everybody's kind of like wearing probably their best outfits or what they feel most comfortable with. You know, there's a guy that is wearing sports clothes, and probably for him, like, that's the coolest way to show where he belongs and what his aspirations are. And everybody else is like holding things that are meaningful to them, you know, or portray who they are, even if it's just a lighter and his sunglasses. But those are the things that he carries everywhere, and those are the things that he uses for the photo. So in a way, even if it's an old-fashioned technique, it's a very modern look on it, because it's staged, but it's staged with what the person wants it to be staged like, you know, and it's staged, but there's a natural thing behind it. And there was a nice video, very short video, showing when she was taking these photos, and it seemed to be like in a market or something like that, and there was a little stall where she was doing it. And apart from the fact you have to admire, you know, the technical difficulties of like doing it there, and you could just see how people were like going in and to have their portrait taken, and yeah, they were curious to see what it looked like. I experienced that plenty of times when I was working in Egypt. Everybody wanted to see it. The minute you took a photo, especially if it was of them, everybody wanted to see what it looked like and called everybody around to show them, and found it really amusing and wanted to have a copy and all this. And yes, at the same time, they were just very much themselves. I think that's nice because in the photo, the faces are just kind of like showing people as they are. Some of them are frowning and some of them are looking serious, and even the women that have like niqab or even more like restrictive clothing, that is kind of like very between religion and like ethnicity, and it's you know, that's still the way they wanted to be shown, because that's who they are, so that's their part of like their identity. So yeah, overall I liked it very much.
Yeah, and just to explain as well, the idea was to capture things that might disappear with globalization, show them as human beings, because even though they're in these traditional dress and things like that, you're so close to them, and she brings out their faces so much that you look past that, and yes, they have these different customs, but they're human beings fundamentally, and we're all the same, or we have the same value as human beings. Also, is it an effort to fight tokenism, kind of making these folkloric, because they're not folkloric, they're part of a thriving culture, maybe not as much as in the past, but the people who live in this reality are very proud of what they represent, their objects, as you described as well. And also this idea of Orientalism, which is like the Western appropriation, I guess, of Eastern culture. And even if you go to the Museo de Saralbo, which is a kind of house museum in Madrid, you can see this fascination with things taken from the East, and this exotic, thing that people don't really understand, but they kind of fetishize to an extent as well. So that's kind of the other background to the exhibition also. But you described it very well. So do you have any final comments on this?
No, I think it's definitely like worth seeing, and it's just nice that unfortunately this person passed away, but there is like this piece of work accessible to everybody, so you can always check it out on the internet.
That's very true. So thank you very much for listening to part two on the way, part three. Elephants. So if you're wondering why Mary's laughing, is because this is take two. We're not doing another one. You're dancing as Ganesha, the elephant god.
This.
And I've seen the choreography. You're lifting your leg up to symbolize a trunk of the elephant.
More or less, well, like the leg is for the actual legs, but different like gestures with the arm or the trunk, and also we do the ears with like both arms, just wrap around the head.
Is this if I hadn't seen the choreography, I would swear you're explaining some child's reenactment of Dumbo.
Well, it more or less is like that.
Yeah. Okay, well, it's obviously something, it's not Bollywood per se, you've told me, it's classical Indian dancing.
Yes.
It's effectively a prayer told through dance.
It is, yeah, it's a mantra.
And any Indian would recognize the significance of all the movements and things
definitely,
like that.
Definitely, yes.
And in the choreography that I've seen, and may we say your teacher's a week away from giving birth, but still giving class.
Whatever. Good luck to her.
Good luck to you, Lola. And but they were giving you symbolic gifts of food and things. What else were they giving you? Plants or something?
Flowers. Yeah, it's offerings, because, well, you want to be in good terms with a goddess and give her good things, because she's the goddess of prosperity and good luck and, yeah. Good wishes.
Okay, fascinating. And also as well, you might have heard, well, you did hear, and take one from me, that the Indian Oscars are in Spain, Mumbai, for the first time in ages. And you were in attendance to the one in that last year that was in Spain?
No.
2 years ago? 3 years ago?
Probably 3 or 4 years ago, yes.
Wow, was that long ago? I remember it though, so fair play to me.
Yes, fair play to you indeed. So, yeah, maybe 3 years, I don't know. Yeah, they used to tour, didn't they?
Yeah, because it's been really, I guess, consistent, or... not aggressive. What's the word I want? Like passionate, yeah. Kind of passionate push to promote Bollywood all over the world.
Yeah.
How do Indians feel about having the Oscars outside the country? Because it's like in Spain having El Clasico in New York or something. It's like, okay, you still watch it, but it's it's weird, you know?
I think they like it because anyway, there are, obviously, there are Indian immigrants all over the world that have the opportunity to attend, for example, when the Oscars were here.
Yeah.
So many Indian people and just fans as well. And anyway, like, India is a huge country and most people wouldn't have the opportunity to attend anyway, so they will watch you on TV, so it doesn't matter, like, where you are.
Yeah.
Then everybody can watch it. It's still a big event.
Okay. And the significance of it coming home now, do you think the campaign is over to push it all over the world? Or is it just a brief stop back home before conquering the world again?
Yeah, probably. Just, you know, every so often you have to
touch bring base.
Yes, touch call base. Yeah, exactly. Have some nice food and go back on the road.
I'm sure they have Indian food at the Indian Oscars in Spain.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think they are quite good at, you know, organizing parties and things. I mean, they're quite good in the sense that, they like having the traditions and here in Madrid, for example, until a couple of years ago, there was always like an Indian, like a Bollywood festival in the spring. And then also in November, there is the Diwali festival.
Yeah.
And this year, we're not sure whether they're going to call us for that or not, like other years, because with the change of government, maybe they are not so keen on all these, like, different cultural celebrations.
Well, judging by the Spanish flag hanging outside Cibeles.
Yeah, but in the past, around this time, there was Diwali, that the Festival of Lights, and we used to go. So.
Okay. Very good. So, can you pack your trunk and go all the way over to plugging your podcast?
Okay, so you can find us on all podcast platforms, pretty much, like Spotify, iTunes, and our blog is irishliceofmadrid.com, and you can find us on Twitter at elarpa1 and on Facebook elarpa media.
Thank you very much. Our blog is irishliceofmadrid.com.
That's it.
I know, but this is the segue to the article that we mentioned in the first part. So very well coordinated. As we mentioned, we went to the Irish pop-up Gaeltacht, and you can read more about that in our blog. The link will be in the description, and you can see other stories as well. And that's that. We'll talk to you next Thursday, or next week at some point. We'll record another episode. And until then, good luck.
Bye.
The Elarpa Podcast, the home for cultural chit-chat in and outside Madrid. People will talk.